then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's July the 28th, 2011. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, that dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune. And hurrah, my voice for freedom, tis the rising of the moon.
Now, first thing, a request to my listeners. Does anyone listening to this podcast have current contact information for Bill White? That's not for me. I've actually pretty much said all I have to say about White. But I've received 5 or 6 requests from people who used to know him back in the day and who won't check in with him. Now, these appear to be legitimate former supporters, so far as I can tell, who genuinely want to know how he's doing and if they can help in any way. Bill White got out of prison in April of this year. He has a wife and a sick child, and he's trying to rebuild his life after what America did to him. So if he doesn't want to get back on the horse right now, I can dig it. If that is the case, and some of you have heard from him specifically to the effect that he doesn't want any further movement contact at this time, or who knows, maybe no further contact with the movement forever. Anyway, if you know for a fact that's the case because he told you so, let me know and I'll pass it on. Otherwise, it would be nice to have at least an email address for him if possible. Okay, obviously the big story this week is a guy named Anders Breivik who tried to blow up the prime minister in Oslo, Norway, and who later went berserk with a gun at some left-wing youth camp out on an island in a fjord somewhere in an attempt to kill a former liberal prime minister from the ruling Labour Party who wasn't there. She'd left early, and so he showed up and he ended up killing a lot of other people. A few of our own listeners have sent me emails weeping and wailing about, oh, how could he kill so many beautiful blonde people? And it's taken all of the remains of my patience not to snap at them. Just because there's yellow on the outside of the head, that doesn't mean there's not red on the inside. I'm sure I'm not the only person in the movement to have noticed down through the years that, as a rule, the more blonde and blue-eyed they are, the filthier race traitors they are. I tell you, my own heart damn near broke back in 2008 when I heard that Kirsten Dunst was making special campaign videos for Barack Obama. Of course, Kirsten Dunst is a millionaire at 28 who gets between $8 and $10 million per picture. I think she got $8 million for Wimbledon alone. And those 4 Spider-Man movies where she played Spider-Man's girlfriend have probably put her net worth in salary, royalties, and franchising alone up over $100 million. Obviously, left-wing liberalism is a luxury that she can afford. Has anyone besides me ever noticed that there don't seem to be any poor white liberals at all? They're all rich as hell, what the Brits call champagne socialists. Okay, back to the Norway thing. Anders Breivik is now being referred to in the media as a right-wing extremist, right-wing kook, sometimes as a Christian zealot, that kind of thing. Now, the implication is that he's one of us, which in point of fact, he is not. Anders Breivik is a neoconservative. I mean, he's a Freemason, for God's sake. His Facebook page and his other internet writings contain Zionism and praise for Jews, which, needless to say, you're not going to hear from anyone in the mainstream media. In fact, I suspect that's why he wasn't allowed to say anything during his recent court appearance. mustn't embarrass Israel by making it look like one of their auxiliaries flipped out. Breivik had stated that he wanted an open hearing so that he could make a speech explaining himself, but that was very quickly denied by the judge, and he has now been ordered held totally incommunicado with no letters or contact with the outside world. His own lawyer, appointed by the courts, of course, revealed in a press conference this morning that his meetings with his client are all monitored and recorded, and he was given a whole laundry list by the government of things that he was not allowed to discuss. And, of course, he was not allowed to discuss the contents of the list with the media either, or he'd be yanked off the case and probably prosecuted himself. Now, that's almost up to Edgar Steele judicial standards there. According to the attorney, Breivik has not yet even been officially charged with anything or informed as to how many people he allegedly killed. Now, Breivik is actually what you might call a modernized nationalist. In Europe, over the past 10 or 15 years, our movement has gone through a process wherein once legitimate nationalist groups and parties have been hijacked and turned into branches of neoconservatism, serving the Jewish and Zionist agenda. The first mark of a modernized organization is that any mention of the Jews is banned. It becomes nothing but immigration and Muslims, Muslims, Muslims. Oh, and they're okay with queers. Now, any toleration whatsoever for homosexuality is always a dead giveaway that something is very, very wrong. No civilization that has ever tolerated that particular perversion has ever survived. And even white people who just tolerate it without practicing it themselves are revealing the fact that they've been too badly damaged in their minds and their characters by liberal drivel to be in any way effective as leaders or political activists for us. One example of modernized nationalism in Europe is that Dutch outfit all those years ago that was run by a guy named Pim Fortuyn, who was as queer as a $3 bill and who actually lived openly with another man. A very prominent example of this whole business of the Jews hijacking formerly legitimate nationalist parties in Europe is the British National Party, where Nick Griffin has basically expelled everybody who ever served under old man Tyndall, and who retains even the slightest tendency towards National Socialism or genuine racial consciousness. It's all just anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim and pro-Iraq and Afghanistan war now. This is how you get BNP candidates for local council and European Parliament offices posing proudly on their campaign literature with their mulatto grandchildren, saying, "See, I'm not a racist, I just hate those wicked Muslims." Needless to say, anyone who so much as whispers the forbidden J word gets kicked out of the BNP so fast it makes their head spin. Not to mention the incident many years ago involving Griffin and Martin Webster, which I won't get into since Webster himself is such a dubious individual. But I have to say that I do find it very strange that Griffin didn't sue Martin Webster for possibly the grossest libel that one man can inflict on another. Given the nature of British libel laws, it should have been a slam dunk, because in the UK, damage is assumed, unlike the United States, where you actually have to prove that you suffered damage because of the libel. The point is that Nick Griffin has always pointedly avoided any situation where he would be examined under oath about his recreational life, and where he would have to deny it under penalty of perjury, or maybe not. Maybe if he ever got backed into a corner under oath, Griffin wouldn't deny it. The Brits have always had a bizarre tolerance for that kind of thing in their upper classes that I've never understood. Something about upper-class Brits getting their butts beaten with birch rods when they were little boys at Eton and rugby or some such crap. Look, I think a lot of Britain and the British people, and Tommy Atkins himself is still a pretty good bloke, but I'm sorry, any nation that thinks Benny Hill is funny has got a few screws loose. I'm told by some of my British contacts that there are other indications that Griffin is lighting the loafers, but in all fairness, I have to say that the situation in the British National Party has become so angry and bitter and convoluted that it's almost impossible to get any reliable information about just what the hell's going on. Another symptom of these modernized groups is that they rant and rave about Muslims, 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 but they actually have Jewish members. Right now, I understand that the French National Front has some Jewish officials and runs Jewish candidates. Now, the official excuse for this is that Jews are, quote-unquote, part of the European historic tradition. Yeah, well, so is the Black Death. Anyway, this is apparently where Anders Breivik is coming from, the modernized neocon wing of European nationalism. I've had some people email me, and I've read some websites by people who insist that it's all some deep, dark Jewish plot to discredit everybody in Europe to the right of center. And I suppose that's always possible, but right now, on the information we have available, I think Breivik is just an ordinary white guy who got fed up and who, through some genetic fluke, still had some of the old Viking blood in him. Of course, none of these modernized parties are ever going to get anywhere because they use democracy. And the whole purpose of democracy is to prevent change. They're attempting to create change using a system which has been designed from the ground up to prevent the very thing these parties are trying to accomplish. The powers that be have not forgotten that Hitler, Mussolini, Admiral Horthy in Hungary, Pilsudski in Poland, and other nationalist leaders of years gone by came to power through democracy, and they are determined that it will never happen again. I would, however, like to comment briefly, if I may, on the issue of Breivik's target selection. For once, one of these flip-outs finally seems to have gotten it right. Breivik tried to take out not only the sitting Labour Party Prime Minister, but also the former Prime Minister, some woman, Gro Gruntland, something like that. I read an article in the British Telegraph about her, and apparently she is the uber-liberal of European politics. It was her policies who led all those goddamn wogs into Norway to begin with. Now, where he went wrong was in faulty intelligence. The Prime Minister stayed home from his office that day, and so he wasn't there when the bomb went off. And the ex-Prime Minister Hag was actually on the island making a little speech to all the little future Labour Party lefties and bureaucrats who were attending this summer camp or whatever, but she left before Breivik got there. Apparently, he got caught in traffic and he was late. Guys, I've made my views on flipping out like this known already, and I won't go over it again, but I will say this. If you do come to the conclusion that it's not worth living in this toilet anymore, and you make the decision to give up your own life in order to try and make a point through propaganda of the deed, do your homework and plan it properly. Don't just go out into a shopping mall and go berserk. Make allowances for things like rush hour traffic or whatever you need to make allowances for. Now, if you're going to blow your own brains out at the end, like so many of these guys do, make your life count for something. And when you get caught, they're going to do things to you that would make a dog vomit for many years. So again, you might as well make it count while you've got the chance. If you're going to do the time, you might as well do the crime. A good example of a successful hit is the assassination of left-wing liberal Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme in 1986. Now, they never did solve that one. It was very simple, almost like a mob hit. Some guy just walked up to Palme on the street when he was sneaking around. I think he was visiting a porno theater or something like that on the sly. Anyway, some guy just walked up to him and blew him away and took off. And they never did solve that one. Although, of course, they tried to blame it on us. Eventually, the Swedes tried to pin it on a LaRouche, of all people, some drug addict named Peterson, but the Swedish courts eventually threw it out on the grounds that there was no evidence, and what there was pretty obviously fabricated by the Swedish security services. I guess Swedish courts in those days were a little bit better than our federal courts today, who refused to let Edgar Steele's defense witnesses testify that the audio tapes were fabricated. I would like to make a prediction regarding the ultimate fate of Anders Breivik. My guess is that he will never reach a public trial. He's going to be found hanging in his cell, or else he will develop a tummy ache and be rushed to some prison hospital, where he will mysteriously die of some alleged medical condition. The system cannot afford to allow Anders Breivik to live any more than they can allow him to speak out in court. There are a lot of Anders Breiviks all over Europe, white men who have simply had enough. And the liberal regimes of Europe don't dare let the public hear this man's voice, even if he isn't one of us.
Hi, guys. This is Axis Sally. Now, there have been some rumors that I support terrorism and illegal activity, and I have to say this is absolutely true. Not only do I support such activity, I'm openly asking all my listeners, especially the young children, to engage in an act of domestic terrorism. I hope all the parents will encourage their children in following my instructions. I am, of course, talking about opening up a lemonade stand, which I have recently learned is illegal and therefore wrong. In Georgia, some preteens were told by the chief of police that their lemonade stand was illegal because they did not have vendor's permits. Other shady underground lemonade operations were discovered in Oregon, where young children got their start in a life of crime by making and selling lemonade out of their own yards without food handlers' permits. The girls in Georgia have now resorted to doing yard work to earn money. I'm surprised they would admit that to a reporter. I imagine now they'll get visits from the IRS and from affirmative action appointed police officers who will want to see their business licenses. The police chief in Midway, Georgia, whose name is seriously Kelly Morningstar, said, "We didn't know what was in lemonade or who made it or how it was made." Apparently, this really matters, because I'm sure you know exactly what's in your McDonald's hamburger and who made that, some illegal Mexican. I was just now looking up the Midway Police Department to see if the moron who doesn't know how to make lemonade is male or female, and it figures it's a woman. Well, sort of. I'm guessing it has female parts. Why do ugly bitches always have to ruin everyone's day? So, Kelly Morningstar and anyone else who spends a little too much time watching TV to learn how to make a refreshing summertime beverage, here is how you make lemonade. First, you get some lemons, and then, oh, actually, never mind, I probably shouldn't be giving away all my terrorist secrets on the radio. This is what's wrong with America. This is one of those things that is eventually going to make normal white Americans say, "We cannot take this anymore." When things that are wrong become not only accepted, but practically mandated, and things that evoke images of wholesome Americana and youthful summertime activity are criminalized. And let's face it, this is a law that will mainly hurt only white kids. It's white kids who are instilled with a sense of responsibility, who are told they need to do something to work for their money, show a little initiative. Don't even get me started on what happens to the kids who attempt to sell homemade goods. I read another article where a neighbor actually called the police on a child for selling cupcakes out of her own front yard. I don't think many nigger kids bake cookies or do yard work to earn spending money. Maybe they try to sell some flat grape soda and then take your wallet if you wanted to buy some to be polite. So, I would like all the young children everywhere to get out there and cause problems, break the law, show complete disrespect for authority, and do things with lemons and sugar without having the proper license to do so. Every house in every neighborhood, every sidewalk on every public street, every parking lot of every building needs to have a lemonade stand or a cupcake stand or a Kool-Aid stand with a cute little white kid behind it who has no food handler's card or vendor's permit. Sell as many illegal treats as you can, and at the end of the day, don't declare any of the money you made. Buy something nice for yourself, then buy more of that stuff that's illegal for you to touch without the proper permit, and do it all over again the next day. Overwhelm your local police department. Make the pigs work. Make them go into serious overtime so they can't afford vacations and health benefits. Shock your teachers. Turn your little world upside down. The feds will be so busy they'll need to devote resources to having a whole lemonade unit. They won't be able to focus on other crime like niggers breaking into cars and niggers robbing banks and niggers selling drugs, which means these things will continue at a slightly higher volume than they already do, and white people will be able to rely on public safety slightly less often than they can now. Maybe, just maybe, this will be how the revolution starts, and you kids will be what kicked it off. Just remember, if they capture you and start demanding to know what was in the lemonade or how it was made, use only the five words, "I have nothing to say." When life gives you lemons, throw them at retards like Police Chief Kelly Morningstar. I salute you, future martyrs of our sacred cause and your sweet citrus drink. White power!
Our first music break comes from another one of Sally's favorite groups. This is Final War, and the song is called Race and Land.
I dream of a nation so white, proud, and free. I dream of a race destined to be. I'm hated by society, but still my heart holds true. Cause my dream is a victory and a fight. To the battle is true.
Fight for the last, I'll fight till the end of
Every now and then, I get emails and letters from people taunting me and saying that I don't dare put opposing views on this show. Fine, I received this audio file this week from a man in the Midwest who has made it clear that he intends to remain in the Midwest. You might say that he represents the just-sit-tight school of white nationalism, the idea being that if we all just stay where we are and keep on doing whatever it is we're doing, somehow or other, it will all turn out okay. Now, obviously, I disagree with this, but if I'm honest, I'd have to admit that more people agree with this gentleman than with me, as witness the tiny handful of out-of-state license plates I've seen coming over the hill during the past 10 years.
Hi, this is JR, and I am a listener of Radio Free Northwest and a supporter of the Northwest Migration. I had some comments today I wanted to share with Mr. Covington's audience about the subject of privacy and activism and whether those people of ours who are racially aware, who understand the situation, whether they should become out in the open, full white nationalists, organizers, and activists, or if instead they should try to do activism under some type of cover. Keep the privacy and not be outed in society as an open white nationalist that names the Jew and et cetera like that. I sent over to Mr. Covington a letter from Pastor Robert Miles, who was the white nationalist leader in Michigan in the 70s and 80s, I think a little bit in the 90s. And he suggested that the time now is for secrecy and activism, protecting the identities of our people, recognizing the fact that we are living behind enemy lines, and we will be persecuted and our efforts will be negated if we give up our identity. So I wanted to share that with other people. And my advice is it's up to the individual what you feel is going to work best, but to consider doing activism. And this does not mean it's an excuse not to work, but to have some kind of cover. Say that you're a conservative, work for immigration control in some area where that's important, organize in some type of group that you have some affiliation with. Religious affiliation, if you're German, join a Lutheran, conservative Lutheran church in Minnesota or Wisconsin. And then subtly not coming out that you're an open racist Nazi, but work for the interests of our people in whatever organization that you have there. And my advice is consider what works best for you, but I've been successful having some type of a cover. Again, this is JR, and I'm a supporter of Radio Free Northwest.
Okay, as I mentioned last week, we are under pressure from the FCC and the U.S. Attorney General's office for alleged discriminatory practices or some such BS because we have, quote-unquote, no minority community input on this show. I personally think it's ridiculous to try and apply these idiot laws to a small white nationalist podcast, but until I get a read on an exact legal situation, or until we can get the money to hire an attorney to fight this, one or the other, it looks like I have to keep on going up to the bus station once a week and dragging this coon off whatever bench he's sleeping on.
This is Dry Ice Washington, and I's bringing all you folks out there in Radio Land the news and the views from the African-American community. This week, I was going to talk about the continued negotiation for increasing the federal debt ceiling and the latest developments in the stock market and the international situation in general. But then I decided, fuck that shit. I want to talk about a dead Jew bitch. Last Saturday over there in London, England, that skinny-ass Jew hoe Amy Winehouse done OD'd in a crib. And now everybody be all weeping and hollering about what a great singer she was, all that kind of crap. But I gonna tell you, that girl wasn't shit. She act like she Aretha Franklin, but she really just a Jew wannabe. She called herself a blues and a jazz singer. But blues and jazz is black folks' music, and this Jew ho kept on trying to be black. She sing black, she act black, she do black drugs, she trying to become a naturalized nigger. And so she got her wish. She died like a nigger with a needle stuck in her arm. I never do understand these white people who got this stupid fucking idea that there's something cool about being a nigger. I've been a nigger all my life, and I sure the hell wish I was something else. Shit, I better be a Chinese than a nigger. Chinese funny people, boy, you know what they do? Eat with sticks. Cause that bitch Amy Winehouse, she a Jew, so maybe that why she won't be a nigger instead. She won't step up. But I tell you something, that Amy Winehouse, she an ugly woman. I mean, you bitches is all plug ugly to begin with, but that Amy Winehouse looked like her face caught on fire and they put it out with a fork. Amy Winehouse, a skinny woman, too, and that's why she couldn't have been no black woman. Black woman can't be skinny. Black woman got to have a buffalo butt. Yeah, black men got to have that booty, and Amy Winehouse, she didn't have no booty. Just a lot of nose. Okay, lips, too. Yeah, that Amy Winehouse, she had lips for days, but she ain't got no booty at all. I guess that's why she couldn't never get no black men, because she's too ugly. I mean, there are some things even a nigger won't do, and fucking Amy Winehouse be one of them. I'll tune in next week for another insightful commentary expatiated into the archives of gravity by me, Glass Washington. Now, where that fat motherfucker Hal Cunningham won't give me my bottle of wine?
Stupid monkey.
Last week, I played part of an address by Louis Beam, and I asked if anyone out there had a copy of a speech that he gave to a meeting that took place in 1992, just after Ruby Ridge. I didn't get that one, but one of our listeners did forward me this one speech from another conference, which took place sometime in the 1990s. I'm not exactly clear on the details, and he wasn't either. It was a long speech, almost 40 minutes, which is too long for this show, and so I had to select an excerpt from it, so I took this clip.
Now, the conference is drawing to a close, and we're already thinking about going home and what we're going to do tomorrow and what we haven't done that we should have done or thought we needed to do this weekend and didn't get done. These everyday mundane things that seem so important to you will in the not too distant future not be so important. America is changing. It's been a long, slow process, and it's been very hard for those who despise our way of life, our heritage and our culture and our beliefs and our religion. It's been hard for them. They've worked hard over a long period of time. For most of this century, though, they have been steadily accumulating power into their hands. Now, power is a substance that is shared. And to accumulate power means you must take it from someone else. In other words, you cannot have all the power unless everyone else is powerless. The government has, since 1865, when the war for the Constitution ended and was lost, accumulated power in Washington, D.C. Now, they know that absolute power absolutely corrupts. The problem is, most of those men were very corrupt before they even got any power. So then they assumed more power, and they are absolutely corrupt. Now, what has happened? The government of the United States has taken gradually, piece by piece, they pull that power to Washington, away from your home, away from your city, away from your county and state, and pull it into Washington, D.C., where they, the great masters that they be, these would-be petty potentates, these born-again tyrants, want to make all the decisions in your life and the life of your children. Now, they feel competent to do so. However, judging their competency could produce problems. You see, the programs that they have in store for you, you may not desire. But if you are powerless, you cannot do anything about it. So all of your knowledge and all of your great expertise that you've accumulated over the years and put up here between your ears is useless if you have no power. It doesn't matter how much you know when you're enclosed in one of their 6x6 cells. The only thing you need to know is what time is mail call and what time is chow, because that's all that's going to matter. Because you see, as they gain this power in and make you weaker day by day, year by year in this country, they are reaching a critical mass where they are going to have the ability to literally, actually, physically enslave us all. Now, you might say to me, well, Lewis, why would anybody want to enslave us? Well, slavery is relative to the man that's enslaved. There's different kinds of slavery, is there not? The example we had in this country was black slavery. But do any of you ever doubt that there's also other types of slavery? How about economic slavery? How about a man that has to struggle from paycheck to paycheck just to put a little beans and potatoes on the table for those children? Has no time to spend with his family because if he misses a day's work, he's so in debt and so far behind that his family will go hungry. That's economic slavery. And is there another type of slavery? Is there such a thing as mental slavery? Well, let me tell you, there is. Do you doubt for a minute that fully 100 million people in this country are slaves to propaganda and lies and ideologies and beliefs that are absolutely false? Do you doubt that? No, you don't. You know that at least 100 million of our countrymen are enslaved mentally to one degree or another. So there are many different kinds of slavery, and these people want to use us because they want to control us because they want power. Not just power so they can say they're powerful, and not just wealth so they can say they're wealthy. They have a world outlook, a belief system, and what we fail to understand is that their values and their beliefs are very, very important to them. Now, their God is not your God, of course. And the things that they think are good and the things that they want for this country and for this world are certainly opposed to what you believe in, but to them it is very desirable. And because it is desirable to them, they are constantly working day by day to accomplish, to achieve, to further their goals. Now, if you're starting to get the picture here, you've got the picture, a mental image of those who are opposed to you and I and our belief system for 125 years at least, and we could go back further, but that's a good reference point, constantly working to achieve a world view, a world outlook. So every time we're not doing what we are supposed to be doing, which is fighting for the kingdom, fighting for our sovereignty, both personal and state-wise, when we are not doing what we should be doing, when we're too busy riding in our boats or our pickup trucks or watching X-rated movies or watching television and the filth that they put on that, every time we're relaxing and sitting back and taking it easy, I want you to know there are literally thousands of people working to enslave you and your children. We cannot rest yet. We are running the race, and the race is not over. If we rest now, they win. So there is no time to lose in this life. You have no spare time. You must struggle until we overcome, till we win, because what we're involved with is a test, a conflict of the ages between good and evil. This is an ages-long contest between them and us. They intend on winning. We must intend on them not. Now, there's so much going to happen over the next 8 years, 10 years, that I really, this, the purpose of this lecture is not to frighten you, but I want to create some impressions in your mind about where the government is going. Because if you know where they're going, you know where you don't want to go. Because believe me, where they want to take you, you want to get off the train now. What they have in mind, and you will see over the next 8 years, is a tremendous increase in this draw of power to Washington. They will be making their move. They have a plan, a global plan, and they're going to pull this power in. So over the next 6 to 8, 10 years, you will notice a dramatic increase in the violation of your personal rights. They will pass the laws, just as they did last week. They will raise the taxes, just as they did a few months ago. And they will pass the treaties. All of these things that you think are bad, they're going to go ahead and pass them. And it doesn't matter how much you know about how illegal they are. They're going to be law. Their law. So at some point, we have to make a decision mentally what we're going to do. Do we go along with their program or do we fight? Well, let me tell you, procrastination and waiting only allows them strength. Our chains are literally being forged in Washington, D.C. Our would-be slave masters have a plan for us, and we're going to have to determine ourselves to resist. Now, I want to resist in every way I possibly can within the bounds of the law. And I want to write every letter that I can write that might move some senator or congressman or representative to do the right thing and not be a whore, a prostitute, a liar, and a thief, and a homosexual. I'd like for him to be a good person. And I want to attend every meeting that I can where good, Christian, loving, caring people like you come together to urge them to work for their future, to work for their children's future, and to build a strong, happy, beautiful America. And I want to do all of that within the bounds of the law. But let me tell you something right now, that if it is a choice between slavery and freedom, if it is a choice between my children's freedom and their posterity's freedom and violating their law, the law of the United States government, I will break their law into 1,000 pieces. No slavery. We will be free, and we will be free by whatever means are necessary. Okay, FBI, write that down. You got it? It does not matter. We will have freedom. No slavery. It won't work. We're not taking it. We've had enough. Did I make that point clear?
I'd also like to point out that one of our listeners also forwarded to me the URLs, the links where I can find 2 speeches by Gerald L. K. Smith, whom I referred to a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, these speeches are also very long, and so I'm going to have to find some way to download them from the site, and then I'm going to have to select a few clips from those speeches so you can get a listen at the Reverend Gerald L. K., but when I can do that, you're in for a treat. Because as I mentioned at the time, Gerald L. K. Smith is reputed to be one of the best speakers and the fieriest orators we ever had in American white nationalism. So I'll see if I can get to work on that this week. This is an old Appalachian Mountain tune called June Apple. Thank you. Okay, something just occurred to me, and I suppose I'd best deal with it now before the whiny emails start arriving. I can foresee getting all kinds of complaints from people whining about my previous remarks regarding Nick Griffin and the British National Party. Oh, Harold, you bad, bad man. You're fighting feuds again. You're spreading disunity. Harold, No, I'm not. Nick Griffin is not a white nationalist or any kind of nationalist at all. He is a neoconservative just like Rush Limbaugh or Irving Kristol. He hijacked a previously nationalist party, true, and he promptly expelled National Socialists and anyone who was aware of the Jewish question and removed all references to the Jews from the party's literature. He now tolerates Jews, and he tolerates faggots, and he tolerates candidates with race-mixing relatives and mulatto grandchildren. He openly renounces and attacks racism. Nick Griffin is not one of us, if indeed he ever was, which I strongly doubt. I have never fully understood this blanket immunity to criticism and scrutiny of personal behavior that anyone who claims to be a white nationalist is supposed to receive from all of us, but whatever it is, it doesn't apply here because Nick Griffin is no longer one of us, and the British National Party is no longer a nationalist party by their own public admission. This is them talking now, not me. Whatever this charmed, criticism-free circle is, they're no longer inside it. So I will continue to criticize Nick Griffin until the cows come home, and that's the name of that game. Okay, a few serious emails to go over. I got one that I won't actually read out because it gives away personal details about the person who sent it. But the basic thrust of it is that this comrade feels that I am not marketing the message correctly. I'm not targeting the correct audience, which is, I understand it should be affluent upper middle class people who are about to be financially sodomized by Obama and permanently outvoted once he legalizes all the wetbacks. And yes, by the way, that does make a certain amount of sense. This comrade feels that I can and should slick up my approach. And as a first step, of course, I need to get rid of all the abrasive racial stuff and bad language like nigger and faggot and tone down the anti-Jewish stuff so that I don't scare affluent upper middle class people away. And then the Northwest Front would get all kinds of support. Someone will give us land and we'll get a lot of money, and some of which I need to spend on suits and ties instead of doing my clothes shopping at Walmart and Goodwill, so forth and so on. Now, this is a variation on an approach I get fairly often in one guise or another, and it comes from genuinely thoughtful and concerned people, all of whom, of course, believe that they are the first ones to think this up. This is another one of these occasions where it really pisses me off that I need to answer these people's concerns, and it's going to sound like I'm being snarky. Now, no disrespect is meant, guys. Please believe me, but what you're asking me to do isn't really feasible. The message from them, in the various ways that they convey it, is that Harold Covington needs to reinvent himself in a kinder, gentler form so as not to frighten away people with money, people whose main concern is their money and not their race, i.e. conservatives. Okay. On the surface, that makes sense, and I'm not saying that I can't be a real chameleon and change my political coloration to adapt with my surroundings. I can, believe me. I never get invited to rich folks' dues, well, upper middle class people's houses. To me, that's rich. But back in the day, when I still owned a suit, that would happen sometimes, and I usually pulled it off okay. Now, for years now, I've been getting approaches from people who want me to put on a suit and tie, figuratively and sometimes literally speaking, and quote-unquote shape and moderate my message and quietly deep six all the dry ice Washington stuff, and if I must say Jew, only do it over in the corner in whispers, that kind of thing. Now, let me hasten to add that this is not an attempt at quote-unquote modernization of the kind that I referred to outfits like the BNP and the Front National in France committing. Now, these suggestions come to me from friends and comrades, people who really do believe that I could make a go of it as some kind of paleoconservative, and who also believe that for practical reasons I need to leave most of you unwashed peasants out there behind and concentrate on the cocktail party set. It's like when someone once asked the bank robber Willie Sutton why he robbed banks, and he replied, because that's where the money is. Now, these people believe that in order to raise the money I need to be effective, to get things like parcels of land for headquarters and meeting places, and to buy the kind of computer equipment and pay people with skills that I need to get into proper internet radio, that kind of thing, I need to go where the money is. And that I have to change and upgrade my musical repertoire when I sing for my supper, so to speak. In movement lingo, this is what's known as going up market. And a lot of movement personalities, I won't say leaders since we're all internet these days and we don't have any more leaders, but let's call them movement personalities. Anyway, a lot of movement personalities try to go up market as they get older. They finally realize that you people are never going to actually do anything, that you intend to remain firmly seated where you are, forever in the passive mode, forever observing and reading and watching, but never kicking in more than the minimum small amount of money necessary to prevent you from being kicked off the mailing list. These movement personalities come to realize that there's going to be no revolution, and they've spent their whole lives shouting into the wind and doing nothing but providing entertainment for people, most of whom never really took the whole thing seriously. They come to understand that they have completely screwed themselves as far as starting over later in life, since the Jews never forgive and never forget anyone who opposes them. They get that they now have no hope of any establishment career job or any kind of regular paycheck or benefits, because those rewards are only for those who conform. They realize that they need to start thinking about their own retirement. That means they need to stop wasting time with skin color and start looking at bank balances and economics, i.e. they need to go conservative in some guise, and they need to hit the rented motel banquet room circuit. This happens a lot, and while I know I'm forbidden by the last taboo from naming names, I am sure a lot of you older hands out there can fill in some of the blanks. I also mention this so that you guys will know that I myself am aware of this process of disillusionment because I've seen it happen so often down through the past decades. I'm going to tell you this, although I can't prove it, I suppose. In point of fact, I'm not like that. I consciously fight against it. I recognize the dangers of disillusionment, and I maintain a conscious struggle against them. Believe me, at my age, maintaining radical chic ain't easy. One dead giveaway, by the way, that a former fearless leader is trying to go up market is when he becomes involved in basically scams to try and get at old people's savings, especially pushing things like gold and silver. Now, if I ever start pushing gold and silver schemes, I want somebody to come up here and shoot me, because you'll know I've gone bad. Now, that and holding meetings in rented motel banquet rooms is another sign, kind of like a full moon and werewolves. I'm saying all these things because basically the suggestion that I so often get from people like this comrade who emailed me, and a lot of others down through the years, is essentially that I reinvent myself as some kind of conservative or in some kind of respectable image, which will allow me to access the few remaining white people in the country with wealth. And of course, in order to do that, the first thing I have to do is, quote-unquote, moderate my message. Now, this is the excuse that the modernizing nationalist parties in Europe give. They have to moderate their message because their candidate for the Bumbleshire County Council is trying to win votes. Well, fortunately, the Northwest Front isn't using democracy, and we don't have to worry about getting a bunch of bird-brained dumbasses to go into a little booth and pull a lever. We don't have to cater our message to stupid people, at least not in that sense. And by the way, I'm not saying that there's not going to be any revolution. I'm saying what I've been saying all along. That's your decision, not mine. Although I do have to say that I have seen very few signs that you really want one. Let's face it, people, if you really wanted something done about this situation, you probably would have done it by now. Instead, you're waiting around for somebody like me or some other fearless leader or a man on a white horse to come along and do it all for you, while you watch it all on CNN with a cold brew and a bowl of nachos on the coffee table. Not happening, guys. However, if you people out there ever do decide that you do want a white revolution, I hope you'll give me a call. I can't do it, but you can. Okay, this response to the comrade's email has been even more than usually rambling on my part, so let me cut to the chase. To a very large degree, I am too old a dog to learn new tricks. And even if I were so inclined to try and dump all my baggage from my assorted previous incarnations over the past 40 years, or hide it in the bushes beside the road or whatever, there are certain imbeciles out there who would make sure that the baggage kept rocking up right on whatever doorstep I was at. So long as there is an internet, and so long as there is a Google where any Tom, Dick, and Harry can play chicken shit games, I will not be allowed to reinvent myself as a conservative or anything else. I cannot unwrite all my horrible, radical, violent novels, those books that speak of actual armed resistance and speak of the death of the king. I will not be allowed to leave my baggage behind because there are individuals out there who have made a full-time job out of that, most likely because they are not who they say they are and because they are being duly compensated to do so by a governmental or non-governmental agency. But that doesn't mean that you guys can't do this. You guys don't have to reinvent yourselves. Now, this is one of the reasons why I keep begging for you people on all levels to help me on the internet, elsewhere. I need to have a dozen, 50, 100 people out there on the net and eventually on TV and on speakers' platforms and at the wealthy cocktail parties saying what I'm saying. The goat dancers can't make up bullshit from the 1990s about all of you. If there are those of you out there who really believe that I'm targeting the wrong markets or whatever, then you need to get cracking and start targeting the right ones. The chances are that you can do it much better than I can because you don't have all the baggage. Yes, we need those upper middle class people at the cocktail parties who are cursing and bitching and ranting and railing at Obama and illegal immigration in America in general. They have the money we need. Realistically speaking, I'm not going to be invited to any of those parties. You're right. I'm too coarse and uncouth. I'm not good cocktail party material, but that doesn't apply to you. You will be invited, and you can talk to these people without goat dancers and paid internet trolls crawling all over you like dung beetles. So you guys need to do what I can't. You guys speak for me and the Northwest in circumstances where you'll be heard much better and more clearly than I can. Now, one of the most interesting subcategories of Aryan folk music is what's known as the gallows ballad, kind of a morality tale about some spectacular crime or other from the 18th or early 19th century. And this, of course, was back in hanging days. Now, often these things were not only sung on the street corners in London or Dublin or wherever, they were hawked as printed broadsheets on the day of the execution at the foot of the gallows with the guy swinging there. Sometimes along with a purported confession, which might or might not have been legitimate. A lot of these broadsheets were printed in Grub Street in London, so if you ever hear that expression, Grub Street, it means the cheap, you know, penny press. Anyway, the whole industry became kind of like a weird Baroque combination of Nancy Grace and the National Enquirer. And most of these gallows ballads were pretty awful, both musically and poetically, but a few of them have survived. This is Planxty.
In the county down, I had honest pay. heights of fame and renown. Oh, had I been obedient and kept the command, I never would have broken the laws of the land. Right, follow the dee. My parents endeavored to give me honest bread. They found me apprentice unto the linen trade, all to an honest weaver that lived hard by. My mind being for rambling, it could not comply. Right, follow the dee. One beautiful creature, Jane Sharkey by name, I gained her affections and I was to blame. My own, I enticed her and we ran away. My troubles began from the very same day. Right, follow the dee. That beautiful creature I soon left the lorn. For fear of her parents I stepped up the morn. But her cruel father pursued me with spite. He made me his prisoner the very same night. Right, follow the dee. And it's often you regard how straightway I was sent to whip me next morning. It was their intent. When I heard of this, well, it put me in a fright. I broke you regard house the very same night. Right, follow the dee. And the guards, they pursued me the very next day. The guards I beguiled and I soon got away. I went down to the shore where a vessel it did lay. I set my foot on shipboard to England, sailed the way. Right, follow the dee. And it's when that I landed in sweet Holyhead. I had no honest means for to earn my bread. And I was loath to beg, but alas, I did worse. To make myself money, I stole a grey horse. Once more on Irish ground, I soon began my tricks again near fair Newry town. For I stole a hat from one Thomas Wright. He made me his prisoner the very same night. Right, follow the dee. And it's off to Newry guard house once more I was sent to hang me next morning. It was their intent. When I heard of this, well, it put me in a fright. I knocked down the turnkey and escaped the same night. Right, follow the dee. And the guards, they pursued me again the next day. The guards I beguiled and once more I got away. Says one unto the other, he'll travel no more. The very same night, near a lock I swam o'er. Right, follow the dee. I rested myself for a day or two more. I went to rob a bleach green where I never was before. But they were strung with guards and the bleach green within. Surrounded was poor Roger, who taken was again. Right, follow the dee. Now Roger was taken, but often did get free. It's come now to his turn for to march to the tree. And all his foolish actions he there did declare. And that put an end to old Roger O'Hare. Right, follow the dee.
Actually, that was a little bit longer than I normally like for music breaks on this show to go, but it was a catchy tune and of historical interest, so what the hell. Live a Little Harold. Now, this is the part of the show where I generally go off onto a long rant about how you should all quit screwing around and get your asses up here. And apparently this is starting to irritate some of you who seem to feel that I need to clean up my act and become much more genteel about it all, and stop acting like this is anything more than an idle pastime and a hobby. Now, the attitude seems to be, come on, Harold. You know perfectly well the white race is really doomed, and no one is ever going to actually do any of this stuff, so why bother to get so worked up about it? That's silly. It's very rude and probably not good for your health to get all worked up over something that we all know is nothing but a hobby. I've had other people tell me to cool it because I might alienate and blow people off, especially potential financial supporters. Instead, I must do a little minuet for these potential financial supporters and mince and bow and scrape and speak softly and mellifluously. Yes. People have heard me talk about the need for money for the past couple of podcasts, and so they assume I'm a patriot for profit like a dozen others they've run across, and that everything I do or say is one long quest for donations. They're completely wrong, but can I prove they're wrong with 8x10 glossy photos from Alice's restaurant? Sorry, I know that was before your time, most of you. The scary thing is that after over a year and a half of doing these shows, I've come to the conclusion that I honestly don't think it matters much what I say on here. I seem to have a hardcore listening audience of a few thousand people. It doesn't seem to be rising much above that. These people will be here every week, no matter what, and almost none of them have any intention of ever doing anything other than listening and maybe giggling about dry ice or having the odd sexual fantasy about Axis Sally, and that's it. After a brief slump at the beginning of the summer, we're back up to 4,000 listeners per week or more, which you'd think is good, but I've come to realize two things. The first thing is that those 4,000 people and more, whatever our top-end audience eventually turns out to be, are going to come here every week no matter what I say, because to them, Radio Free Northwest is entertainment. It's like a television program they've TiVo'd. They can mosey in and download it and get an hour's entertainment whenever they want. Now, the very idea of actually doing any of this stuff simply won't occur to them. It can't occur to them. Their minds simply aren't made in that way. American white people have been raised from birth and socially engineered to believe that to articulate a problem, to discuss it, is the same thing as to solve it. Now, many of you listen to this program, and you genuinely believe that because somebody's actually talking about the problem, i.e. me, then the problem is being solved. It's not. All this is just electronic impulses on a network of machines. There is nothing about Radio Free Northwest at all that can actually solve anything or have any real-world consequences unless you decide that that will happen, and you make sure it happens by listening to me. And for the record, when somebody says listen to me, they don't want you to just listen to what they say and then wander off looking for porn or American Idol on the net. We want you to do what we say. That's what we mean by listening. That's me. I say listen to me, but what I mean by that is do what I say. Because, yes, I do know better than you. Now, are we clear on this? Of course we are. Now, I'm tempted to say that every one of you knows damn well that I'm right, and that Northwest migration in a scenario somewhat similar to the one I describe in my novels is the only hope for any kind of preservation of the Caucasian gene pool on this continent. And I would probably be right, but once again, I can't prove I'm right with 8x10 glossy photos from Alice's restaurant. Look, you don't want me to shout. Okay, I'll whisper. Well, actually, no, I better shout, because if I whisper, you won't be able to hear me over the end music fade-in, so I'll shout then. There is only one plan in the entire white nationalist movement that makes any sense or has any chance to succeed in securing the existence of our people and the future for white children. That plan is the Northwest migration and the establishment of a sovereign and independent white homeland here in the Pacific Northwest. There is nothing else. There will be nothing else. This sovereign and independent nation will not be created by a network of computer users. It will be established by a movement of actual people who physically live here in the homeland. They will be organized into small cells and activity groups of people who live within half an hour's drive of one another. The first step to creating this Northwest Republic is for you. Yes, you. Don't look over your shoulder. There's nobody behind you. I'm talking to you. The first step is for you to make a planned and prepared migration to the Northwest homeland and get your ass up here where you're supposed to be. Now, I want all of you to do like Bart Simpson. Go to the blackboard and write all of what I just said out 100 times. Maybe then you'll finally get it. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.